Welcome to Season 7, Episode 3 of the Fireman Trainer Podcast, published on March 19th, 2024. We're part of the ConcealCarry.com network of podcasts. I also want to encourage you to check out their Guardian Conference coming up on September 20th to the 22nd, Oklahoma City. Register now for early bird pricing. In this episode, we'll be talking with Elite Merchant Systems about how to reduce your exposure to fraud when processing credit cards. Help us help other instructors by giving us a 5-star review, share this podcast with others, and go along and take advantage of this content by going out and saving it or sharing it or going to our website. All the above work. This episode also brought to you by our friends at the FTA, the Firearms Trainers Association. Visit their website at ftaprotect.com to learn more about their instructor coverage offer and their competitive pricing. All certified instructors can apply for FTA coverage, and listeners to the podcast get 10% off on your policy by entering promo code FTP10 at checkout. This episode is brought to you by the LASR Classic Trainer. I use the LASR Classic system in my classroom because it allows me to teach first-time gun owners proper sight alignment, proper drawing from a holster, and trigger control without stepping on the range, saving me time and the student money by not firing rounds downrange. When the student is ready, they know what to do because of the classroom training. LASR Classic is easy to set up and tear down because all you need is a laptop with a webcam to use it. That allows you to set up anywhere you can take your laptop. The application also works with any laser device, from laser cartridges you put in your firearm to dedicated laser trainers. LASR is veteran-owned and operated. Find out more information at lasrapp.com and receive a special 10% discount by using discount code FTP10 at checkout. We bring this podcast to support the industry, the Second Amendment, and most importantly, every firearm instructor in America that dedicates time and energy into making gun owners more knowledgeable.
Today, we're joined by Graham, Paul, and Adam from Elite Merchant Systems. Welcome, gentlemen, and thank you for coming back on the podcast.
Glad to be back.
Thanks for having us.
Great. Well, for those listeners who haven't caught the other episodes you've been on, can you give us a little bit of your background? We'll start with Adam, you being first, and then Graham and Paul.
Yes, sir. So title here is Director of Sales. Help run this office here in North Dallas, Texas. Been in processing for off and on almost about, about 15 odd years. I head up the 2A kind of division here as far as our sales reps go. Personally, big gun guy. Shoot quite a bit, shot at my lunch today. I love the 2A community. So that's a little bit about me.
Super.
I've been with Elite for 15 years managing the back end of things. So I'm not the face. I'm just the guy in the shadows.
Important guy though.
Very important, very modest guy. Very modest.
Yeah, very modest. We call him the Oracle of the operation. Well, again, you know, thanks for having us. This is Paul, managing member of Elite. I mean, God, I've been here 17 years, you know, I feel like it's just yesterday. Big 2A guy, not as big as Adam, but, you know, big in the community, love, you know, shooting guns and a big supporter of the 2A community. And so we're just excited. Another opportunity to be on your podcast here, Rob.
Yeah, well, appreciate you coming on, making time. We've had, you know, different episodes on the credit card processing, what Elite Merchant Systems does, and then as well as how to manage chargebacks. And I think it's today's topic ranks right up there because we're, you know, I'm a firearm expert. I'm not a financial credit card person. But at the same time, I take credit cards, my business. And that's where today's topic of fraud really kind of comes in. And where I'm sure you'll enlighten me even with my experience for it, because fraud's not just something that, you know, somebody who's got a storefront has to deal with, or somebody with a big e-commerce site. We deal with fraud, you know, if you're on the internet or take credit cards, short of taking, even if you take cash, I've seen some counterfeiting schemes that have gone around recently too that have been pretty sophisticated. But you got to be prepared and know what to look for, because when you get hit with fraud, it's like taking money out of your pocket, literally, because you can't get it back.
Yes, sir.
When it comes to fraud, what are some of the biggest fraud scams, whichever, however you want to call it, that you see from a credit card processing standpoint?
I mean, I could jump in a little bit, and I know Graham would probably have a little bit more to add here, but there's obviously we service all different types of merchants. We have our what we call our card present merchants, and then we have our card not present. So both accept credit cards, but they do it in different ways. So from the ones that are doing things in present, you know, when you actually accept the card face to face, there is the identity theft fraud, right? Credit card fraud. There's also people that, you know, they're doing the skimming where they actually are going to put stuff on top of someone's actual point of sale or their terminals. So those are the common ones from the face to face. But then when you go to the e-commerce side or anything done through websites, you know, like what you were talking about, is that's when you have a lot of these chargeback frauds, right? Where they're saying one thing and it's really another. I mean, those are kind of the bigger ones. I don't know, Graham, if you want to add some of your expertise with that.
Yeah, in the non-face-to-face space, a lot of it is you'll get a couple different flavors: running a card that's not theirs and then hoping for the best, or they will use a card that is theirs and then tell you later that it wasn't really theirs. That's very akin to just, you know, going to a place and or going up to a gas station and driving off after you run your card and filled your tank up, which is huge in the gas station space. But it's the more so it's going to be the using a card number that's not yours, using a stolen card number to buy something, have it shipped somewhere, whether it's to your place or to an intermediary. And then either you've got the stuff or you're going to ask for a refund back to a card that's not the one that you used. That's usually one of those big red flags if they're asking for a refund back to a different card.
Yeah, the one thing that comes to mind, I know of a gun shop who was defrauded out of a couple guns and some money, because what happened was they ordered the gun over their website, shipped it to another state, and after almost 90 days, they came back and said it was, you know, wasn't their charge for it. And the credit card company checked into it. It was, you know, some guy who, you know, ordered it, and some girl had picked up the guns and such. The thing that was kind of amazing and frustrating from a 2A standpoint, this dealt with guns, so you would think that, you know, the ATF and local police would be all over it. And basically, since it was just a couple $1,000s, it was looked at as any other kind of theft case. And they filed a local police report, which was in one jurisdiction. And they went along, contacted the jurisdiction where the gun was delivered at, in another state, many states away, actually. And they took it down. And it's like, okay, if we can find the person, you know, we will. But it amazes me because they had the person's signature on the background check form. They had to run a background check. But at the same time, the merchant was out all that money because they were the ones that, you know, sent the gun over there, and they had to refund the money, or the credit card processor forced them to refund the money on top of it. So it was one of those things, understanding the credit card system and how fraud's committed. They do things quite a bit differently nowadays if they're shipping anything out of state. In fact, I don't think they do it out of state, so they don't have to worry about that again.
You know, Rob, we had talked about that before, and you know, my thought is, and not to go down this whole rabbit hole, but typically from the consumer side, when I purchase a firearm online with some of these vendors, that always has to go to an FFL first for me to actually go and do my transfer. So how did they mm-hmm. bypass
that? Well, that's where they had the 4473 form. They went to the dealer they shipped it to the FFL dealer. And that's where it was so amazing that the ATF didn't just go and grab that form and follow up on that person, you know, saying that, you know, if you charge back on that gun but you picked it up, that's fraud, and we're going to go, you know, pick you up. And that's where, you know, a little frustrating, because they, you know, for a transfer to happen, you've got to have a valid driver's license with, you know, your current address on, all those types of things. And that's where it was just shocking that there wasn't more focus on recovering, you know, guns, because if they defrauded them, you know, for the transaction, you know, those guns weren't going to be for somebody's personal collection, or at least a lawful collection.
So 4473 was actually done, you're yep. saying, and they didn't mm-hmm. take that as, hey, you, this is information that they could use for the case to go, and they just, they, it was too petty for them, huh?
You got it.
Unbelievable. That's uh-huh. crazy.
All and, you know, in, right and a whole nother, you know, jurisdiction and stuff like that. So, you know, they had no leverage to, you know, talk to the police chief or do something like that. If it was in your local jurisdiction to try to get some focus on it. It's just like, okay, just another one of those cases, you know, we'll put it on the file.
But yet I could have 10 years for having a stock on my 10.3 inch rifle. That is backwards, man. But yeah.
Yeah. You got it.
Wow. Very crazy.
Well, question, when it comes to these, you know, and I just said the one gun dealer I know that had that, you know, they got charged back on it, they lost the money, but who's responsible in these kind of cases where somebody presents a card and, you know, then comes back, a, you know, a couple months later and say, hey, that really wasn't me that, that, you know, purchased that.
Graham's got a big smile. I'll let him say some, but it is the merchant, sadly. Yeah, it's that's their, the unfortunate part. Yeah, I mean, Graham, you can go into it. I know you got probably a whole lot you want to say about it, but yeah, it's the merchant.
Yeah, it's the downside of accepting credit cards is it's always the person who's accepting the payment if the burden's on them across the board. The whole system in itself is designed to protect the cardholder, not the card acceptor. I used to dance around this when talking with people about it, but I don't anymore. There's nothing you can do. You can present your case as best as you possibly can, but in the end, it's going to be up to someone who's making minimum wage in some office somewhere to read over everything you presented and decide that it was holds the merit of the case or does not. I would be nice if it went to someone who is, you know, this was a professional thing. Like if there's a field you can become part of or a degree you can have, but it's not. It's go to a call center or something akin to that. They either stamp it or they move on with their life. And more often than not, if they can't check every box on the checklist that they have, because checklists definitely have boxes to check, they'll deny it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I can understand. Another situation, and this is one that just, happened to me a couple of weeks ago, is I received a email into my info for American Defense Training, and the emailer went along and asked if I was available to coach their daughter and let me know their rate. You know, very simple, and it's like, wow, this could be very beneficial. Now, went along being, you know, kind, I replied and said, you know, I need to know some information. You know, where's located? How long do you want the sessions to be? You know, what the age of their daughter is, different things like that. So I could, you know, decide if I even want to do something. And they responded with some very vague answers, which of course at that point it went into my spam folder and I didn't have anything else to do with it. But I've also heard of other instructors before that get suckered into this because it sounds very appealing, because one I've gotten before tells you they're willing to pay you a couple $1,000s to go along and train them. But the whole gimmick is they go along, they send you, they overpay you for it, and then they ask you to refund the money. Now, of course, being honest people, you know, I'll jump on it and refund your money right away to make you happy and such. But in reality, their payment's going to bounce or be charged back, and I'm going to be the one that's going to be, you know, refunding the money. And then you get into that twist about, okay, I've refunded something, but it's fraud, but I just got defrauded the other way. And that's another one of those situations where you don't come out smelling like a rose either.
Yeah. You know, that's one thing. But so, you know, what we're seeing from a lot of the gun merchants, and this is from the front end, when we are getting people set up, is we have measures of they have to have certain things on their website, certain things, certain verbiage, T's and C's, privacy policies. So there's a lot of preventative, but there's still, you know, you're running a business, you're busy, and you see something that looks like it's going to make you money. Sometimes people, they don't take the time to do what you did. You know, we see it and hear it a lot. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I have it's someone who I was mentioning before we started. Paul and I met at the show and or at the expo in Milwaukee, and now they've become his wife and him have become clients as well as close friends through, you know, just meeting them, walking by their booth. And they, I'll give them a plug. They're Mod Guns. They're out in Austin, Texas. They do some large sales. They're a SIG master dealer, and they, Chris is his name. He's constantly striving to make things better and more fluid on his website. He actually does a lot, but one thing he just added recently is where you can, if let's say you wanted to buy a pistol that's $2,000, it's not doing the pay over time. It's taking multiple cards for one purchase, where you can do your credit card, your debit card, and multiple gift cards for one big purchase, right? Because a lot of us get gift cards and we never use them, or we use parts of them. So he created this, and I don't know of too many other people doing it, but his fear was now fraudsters are going to see, okay, now I'm going to have all these different types of cards. So he actually already experienced a little bit of it. So he's playing around with it. But the point is you can never be foolproof, unfortunately, out there. And this isn't to just make this all about us. It's always good to have someone in your corner to when this stuff does happen, because it's inevitable. It will. And that's kind of where we come in and what we're all about, whether you sell guns or you sell, you know, food or whatever. We take the time to try and help with that stuff. That's the difference between us and the rest, is you're going to have someone to call that you can let know, hey, I have this. What do you think? What are your thoughts? How would you go about it? Or after the fact, you've already done it. Now we got to take those measures to try and get things ready for when that dispute happens. So it's never going to stop, you know?
Yeah. I think about it the same way. You know, if you had a physical store, you know, you would have, you know, like a security person, or you'd have cameras, you would have different things along those lines.
That's
it doesn't stop it. You're trying to reduce the chances of it, because any established business, you know, knows that they're going to have to write off a certain amount of, you know, sales every year, just because, you know, somebody doesn't pay an invoice, or they get credit card chargebacks or different things along those lines. And that's where, you know, whether it's electronic or a website or in person, you've got to put in steps in place in order to, you know, prevent it as best you can, but never expect it to be 100%, you know, work that into your costs.
Yep.
So as I say,
100%.
That's correct.
Oh, go ahead, Paul.
Yeah. Like, I mean, just from the simplest standpoint, anytime, you know, if you're, let's say, a retail store and you get a credit card that says declined, don't try to run that same credit card again. And if they say, oh, just call my bank, it's fine. Then they give you the phone number. They're pretty much in on the take, because they found a way to kind of trip the system and force an authorization through, even though the money's not going to go through. It just, once you get a decline, always ask for another form of payment. Do not use that credit card, and do not call the phone number that they provide you. Or say that on the back of the card could also be imprinted. I know Graham's smiling because he knows this is pretty common. These fraudsters are, you know, they're tricking clients out there. So I would always recommend the minute you get that decline, ask for another method of payment and just move on. And don't ever, and if that anyone's calling you over the phone and want to purchase and they're pressing for overnight shipment, those are red flags.
No good. Mm-hmm.
Red flags right off the bat.
Yeah, I was thinking, you know, a printer that will print out, you know, credit card, you know, with the stripe on it and all the other information. They're not that expensive anymore. You know, used to be very complicated, and now you can buy them on, you know, eBay used or Amazon brand new. And that's where you've got to keep in mind. Fraud is always going to be there, and you've just got to try to stay a step ahead of it.
Yep.
I was just going to ask if you guys had seen any uptick when it comes to these kind of schemes, when it comes to AI and such. And the reason I ask is the email that I received was obviously not very fluid. It was very brief, but I can see with the advent of AI, to where you can take the same kind of of pitch and ask it to give it a, you know, clean up the English to go along and lengthen it to, you know, put a little bit more detail into it and can make it sound really good from that standpoint. Have you ran into situations along those lines where AI has been the biggest problem?
Yeah, not so much on the card acceptor front yet, but we've been running into it more and more with people trying to get merchant accounts. They're getting better and better. Our biggest weapon on any of these is information, asking questions, as it would be for anyone accepting cards. It's ask the additional questions. If you're not sure, ask more, get more information. More information is always better. But we're also, anyone trying to get their own fraudulent merchant account, we're teaching them the ways to answer the questions. When we say no this time, then they'll call back 2 weeks later, or someone else will call back. And then now they're creating websites. They're using AI to generate new websites for these businesses that don't exist. And they look 100% legitimate. It's you're a pool installer and you've got the most beautiful pool installer website I've ever seen in my life, including pictures of clients and everything else. And it's completely fraudulent because it was generated for them with the click of a button, or they're getting call scripts generated for them by the click of a button. Same thing with emails. You're going to start seeing emails coming in to, if you're not accepting cards in person, very much like the situation you ran into where they didn't seem to be fully on the up and up, but give it another month and they'll hit you up again. But this time it'll be an AI written script or an AI written response to your email. And it's going to be, all right, well, this feels better this time, but ask a couple more questions and we'll see. But every time you ask a question, they're going to come up with another answer for it. They're going to figure out a better way to answer it until they can get you to accept the card or accept the payment. And then it's, you know, we go from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's the beauty of AI, that it, you know, can learn things very quickly. And also the bad part of AI, because they can also learn how to do evil intents, or help somebody with evil intent on how to do things. Right. And that's that really, you know, stinks from that standpoint, the honest business dealings, at least.
There are a lot of steps, at least in the payment world, being taken to understand how AI is getting involved with these things. There are a couple of companies who are dedicating themselves to figuring out how to prevent AI fraud. It's frightening. They aren't there. They aren't there at all, because the AI is learning from them every time they try to get around it. But there are companies that are dedicating themselves to trying to make us safer from AI generated fraud. But it's going to be a thing for the next several years, at least, if not forever at this point, because once you let everything out of the bottle, I just start putting it back in.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's definitely a big challenge, to say the least. Big challenge. When it comes to preventing, it sounds like the best thing to do is keep asking questions, because
information is key. I actually have a list that I created a while back. I just found it. I could just kind of read it off real quick. There's inconsistent order data, larger than average order, you know, unusual location, multiple shipping addresses, many transactions in one short time frame, multiple orders from many credit cards. So it goes back to what those guys were doing. Multiple declined transactions in a row, like Paul said, and strings of orders from a new country, which I know a lot of the businesses we deal with, they don't do much outside of the US, but you know, those are all the big ones that I put together a while back. So and that's more for, I think, your e-commerce environment, for the guys selling anything online. So
mm-hmm.
just a quick list.
Yeah. You know, I talked about the one dealer, you know, got taken for a couple guns and such, but, you know, anybody who has anything that they're selling online, they need to be aware of it, because even if they're selling something as simple as safety pens, you know, the security pens that you can use for self-defense and such, you know, they're not a restricted item. Right. You can go order a whole bunch of them, but if somebody orders, you know, 100 of them, which sounds like a great purchase, but then you get stiffed on them, that really hurts.
Yep.
Because you had to pay some money to get those and ship it to them and do everything else like that. And I think, you know, when you look back at most transactions, the urgency, the, you know, size, and, you know, do you have an existing relationship with that vendor, and seeing what the, you know, what the history's been looking like is, are important factors for it. one of the things I've noticed too on it that seems really simple, but it's also easily overlooked, is looking at their email address. There's more and more people that are, you know, used to be, you know, you look for the at you know, a specific company, but they've also found out that they can go along, create some very creative Gmail accounts, make it look really good. So a quick glance looks like, oh, this is legit, but in reality, it's a Gmail address. And if you've never dealt with Gmail, you know, they're a dime a dozen. You can create one in, you know, a couple minutes. If you're not careful with it, you can get in trouble with it.
Yep, absolutely.
So any good information on validating your, you know, somebody presents a card to you? I know we said, you know, watch out for declines and things like that, but anything when it comes to figuring out if somebody's printing their own credit cards, different things like that? I mean, it used to be they were embossed. Now they're all, you know, flat cards with the chip on it. But, you know, that can be, again, you know, the right equipment, you can make that work also.
When it comes to chip cards, the biggest thing is to run the chip and not swipe it. The chip is, it's not unbeatable without question, but it helps a lot. So the whole nature of the chip is you run it now, and what it does is it creates a token or an authorization for the next sale, not the one you're doing now, but the next one. And so if someone were to copy your chip or were to fraudulently create their own, it's a race to who gets the next transaction. More than likely, it's going to be the cardholder themselves and in a card present environment. So it, once it, that next token is cashed in, the previous chip has just become invalidated. So worst case, it should just stop at one sale, but it's, the chip makes it a lot harder. And that's why the card companies, if you swipe a chip card and someone disputes it, it's going to be an automatic loss because they're pushing everyone into making sure you have the ability to take the chip card. The chip card is your biggest friend. If it's not a chip card and those numbers aren't raised, you've got a problem. If the numbers look like they were hammered down at one point and then re-raise, you also have a problem. I've seen that a couple of times. And then if it declines and they ask you to talk to their bank and they have them on the phone, like Paul said, yeah, that's not really their bank. That's their buddy who's sitting outside in the car just hoping to really, really get that free refrigerator.
Mm-hmm. I want to piggyback that real quick, Rob. I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but Graham just touched on it. So if you have one of those old readers, right, that only has the ability to swipe and doesn't have the dip or to accept the chip, which some of these merchants and some of these older gun guys, these gunsmiths that have these old school setups, if someone decided that, okay, you swipe, everything's good, you walk away, if that person wanted to create a dispute and set the chargeback in motion, when the paperwork goes in, even though it was a card present transaction, because they don't have the ability to allow their customers to dip their chip, they automatically lose that, even though it's a valid sale. It's an automatic loss. So there's merchants out there that do have old equipment that do not have that EMV ready to accept the chip. They are absolutely playing with fire. They could lose, even though it was a valid sale. If someone knew that and wanted to prey on someone with that, they can do a lot of harm. So I don't know if that, does that totally make sense? You follow that?
Yeah, that makes sense. The thing that's amazing to me is I know a few merchants around my home that, you know, don't take the chips yet. And literally, if more criminals knew that, they could literally walk in there, buy groceries, walk out, and, you know, dispute it. And there wouldn't, you know, I'm sure there's probably something, you know, that, you know, law enforcement could do as far as tracking them once the dollar amount gets enough, but how long is that going to be and how much is it going to cost your business? That's amazing.
Well, Rob, I would say this, if you see those in your town,
call us,
tell them to call us right away, because I mean, you're just basically, I mean, like you said, you're just asking for it. And these guys, they're scouring, and when they hit, they don't hit just for $100. They hit hard. We had a client that actually got hit, and they got hit for a pretty expensive mountain bike. And like, it was just like, they were like, we got signatures and it was all legit. I'm like, no, they said, rush it, ship it to this address in Florida, 'cause we're going to take it overseas. All the red flags, and the employees was excited to sell it. I think it was like a $5,000 or $10,000 bike. and they lost the charge, they lost the merchandise, so they're out both ways, you know.
Yeah, it's just like somebody walked in their showroom and wrote off on the fire.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. So yeah, if you happen to see anyone that's doing that, do them the biggest favor and just have them reach out to us right away, because you're saving them thousands. Because the minute they get, I call them sniffed out, it could be dangerous.
Yeah. Just curious, how much does the chip reader cost?
And this isn't to be all cheesy, corny, salesy. We usually just loan those when you become a part of our company, our service. We've signed up in the last, I don't know, 2.5 months, 3 months and shot about probably 50 or 60 different gun businesses. A lot of them are these smaller gunsmiths, Cerakoters, Stiplers, laser, you know, stuff. Here's a machine. As long as you're with us, that's yours. You know, we don't want to make money off that. We want the long-term relationship. So, I mean, honestly, they're a couple hundred dollars. They're not, you know, anything crazy. There are systems out there, point of sales, that do get pricey. But even then, if it's worth it for us, we'll work it out. You know, those things aren't going to set us back or them back, you know.
Yeah, the my point being to
Paul, the cost of it. Yeah.
You know, they lose, you know, $9,000-$10,000 bike. I could be out a couple hundred dollars for somebody who defrauds me out of a class I taught him, something else like that. And at the bottom line, if I'm going to be accepting them in person, that's probably one of the quickest and easiest ways of signing up with you and then have the equipment that, hey, you know, if it breaks, I pick up the phone and say, hey, your equipment broke and get a replacement. Or, you know, if somebody charges something, I've at least got the assurance that, hey, I've got a chip reader, which will give me a leg up versus, you know, having, you know, 1 foot in the grave immediately by having the card swipe.
Yeah, the ROI on what you get, if you're going to pay for it, if you don't work with us, or let's say we do have to charge something, it's well worth it. You are definitely playing with fire if you don't have that set up 100%.
And just to add to that real quick, what I've learned when we sign these new merchants up, we discuss chargebacks with them. They were never even educated from the beginning on how to run certain transactions and just red flags. We try to let our clients know when they switch over to us, just to kind of, you know, red flags and, you know, watch out for chargebacks. And these are some of the things you should look out for. So we try to educate our clients too, as well, all the time. That way they have an idea to be a little more, you know, vigilant when someone comes in and they act all weird. Just know that if it doesn't seem right, it's not right, and go with that instinct, and don't just take the sale and run, because at the end of the day, it can cost you everything in the long run.
Well, I think one thing too, when you talk about education, and we're talking about, you know, March 2024, I'll guarantee in March 2025, or even, you know, by September 2024, there'll be new scams out there. And you just, you know, fast forward it to, you know, 2030, you know, 6 years down the road, and just imagine what kind of some of the fraud that'll be out there. You know, AI will have, you know, matured quite a bit more. The crooks will still be crooks, and they'll be figuring out ways to defraud honest people out of things. And that's where you've got to make sure, if you're going to do these activities, just like firearm training, that you just don't sit there and say, hey, I know everything I need to know. It's going out and going to conferences, going out and talking to people, going out and learning from other people, you know, people's mistakes. I mean, it's tough to go along and, you know, tell your story. But at the same time, if you can save somebody else in the industry some heartache, it's well worth it. Maybe they'll take you to the bar and you can get a drink or two to drown your sorrows in.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, hopefully we get given our audience some good thoughts to think about fraud and how to prevent that when it comes to credit cards and some of the different frauds that are going out. And, you know, this isn't some, you know, big chain store or something else like that. This is, you know, experiences that I've seen myself. These are experiences of people that I know that have had it. It hurts, especially when you're in a small business like that. So appreciate your guys' time today.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Appreciate having us again, Rob.
Yeah.
Well, hey, we're coming we're in season 7 now, and we've got a question for all our guests to answer. We'll have 3 answers today for it. And that is, what do you do for your mental health each day to, you know, keep a clear head and keep things in perspective? And we'll start off with Paul first, and then do Graham, and Adam will go in reverse order.
Well, for me, I just literally take my phone. As soon as I get home, ditch it, turn it off, disconnect the Wi-Fi internet. So there's no way it'll go. And then I just kind of just go for a walk outside and just enjoy nature. You know, nothing like getting some fresh air.
Great.
Good old vitamin D.
How about you, Graham?
All right.
never just a short thing with this man right here. Let's hear it, Graham.
No, it's super immature. It's the vitamin D that set me off right there. riding my stationary bike in the mornings. It's getting up, getting out of bed before I even take a shower, just hopping on the bike and riding for at least a half hour. I can feel the difference on the days when I don't do it versus the days when I do.
Yep, that's good. Gets the blood moving and gives you some time to think about something besides work, probably, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely. How about you, Adam? What do you do besides go to the range at lunch?
I wish I could do that every day. That's not feasible. I mean, time and money, and, you know, cost of nine is still, I don't know, 30 cents right now. But so for me, I used to be an athlete, so working out was a thing. But I actually, every day since August, I've only missed maybe two or three days of not going into the gym. Even so much when Paul and I were in Vegas for SHOT, went to the gym every morning. That's my escape right now. It's my mental health. It's my everything. It's changed my world. I've seen a lot of benefit from the physical and the mental side. So it's my absolute every day. Got to go.
Good. That's keeps you going physically too.
Yeah. It helps.
I got to say, from my standpoint, I've been doing quite a bit more exercising this year and seeing a few pounds go off. So that's always good from a healthy standpoint. And also too, it's kind of weird. I figure out some problems sometimes when I'm out walking and doing things like that, which, don't have my head on computer, phone, screen, any of those things. It's just kind of let things go and let the subconscious work on the issue and come home. And it's like, I got some ideas. It's good stuff. Yes. Well, where can we find more information about Elite Data if people listening to this podcast want to go along and connect with you, Adam?
Yeah, I mean, always can call. We have our office line here in Texas is 972-532-0708. They can ask for me. And then my email is adamy@elitedatacorp.com. They could always go to our website as well. There's an inquiry page. They can contact you if they need to, and you can text me. But any of those means we're available, and we contact people pretty darn quick. So those are the best ways.
Yeah, definitely. And you're very competitive in the industry, and you've also got the education that really goes a long way when it comes to maybe not avoiding completely, but at least avoiding the most obvious ones. That's for sure. And that's what we try to do. Avoid the obvious.
Sure.
Okay. Well, gentlemen, have a good evening, and thank you again for your time.
Thanks, Rob.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rob. Appreciate your time.
Have a great night.
Have a good night.
That's a wrap for this episode. And I hope you found the information we talked about, the credit card fraud, useful. And hopefully you can avoid that altogether, because if it never happens to you, that's a good day. If it does happen to you, there'll be a painful lesson on modern day scams and such that uses credit cards. I also want to go along, and if you're looking for other topics, Elite Merchant Systems been on a couple other times before. If you're looking for their other information, check out them on our website at firearmtrainerpodcast.com. Go into the search bar and just type Elite Merchant Systems or credit cards, and they will pop up, and you can listen to those episodes also. We've got a nice library on the website that you can search easily and listen to them at your heart's content. If you have any questions, suggestions, you can reach me at ftp@concealedcarry.com. Remember, follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Don't forget to register for the Guardian Conference. Talked about at the beginning of the show. Early bird pricing will be expiring soon. And it's training that you will definitely learn a lot from in just 3 short days. It's amazing how much you can get out of 3 days with focused training. Remember, visit our sponsors, especially the Farm Trainers Association at FTAProtect.com, and check out their instructor insurance. Establishing a business was your first step. Your next step should be getting FTA coverage. Remember, use promo code FTP10 for 10% off at checkout. We bring this podcast to support the industry, the Second Amendment, and most importantly, every firearm instructor in America that dedicates time and energy into making gun owners more knowledgeable. Stay safe out there, everyone.
Concealed Carry Inc. and ConcealedCarry.com strives to share helpful information and education about gun-related topics, training tips, and other things that may potentially have legal implications for its listeners. The information contained in this podcast is intended in good faith, but it is important to understand that laws vary from place to place, and we encourage listeners to seek local legal advice to understand laws that apply to them. Nothing in this podcast should be misconstrued as legal advice or counsel.